I don't know what just happened, but glad you're with us.
Yeah, good to be on with you guys. Hope you're staying safe out there.
Yeah, strange times, strange times. You certainly are dialed in with everything football on both sides of the border. Just give me your thoughts. I think we kind of anticipated this would happen, but Tom Brady makes it official today. He puts it on his Instagram first and on Twitter. He's not going back to the Patriots. He doesn't know his next move, but we do know that he wants to play in 2020. It will not be in Patriot colors.
That's right. And just talking to some people around the NFL and sort of on both sides of the border too, right? I obviously have a bunch of contacts in the CFL, but mainly the NFL ones, they kind of felt like this was inevitable, that Brady was going to seek to sort of have his ego boosted a little bit after years of having it continually beat down by Bill Belichick in that system in New England, which produced a lot of Super Bowl rings, but also can really mentally be draining on you.
So what is Tom Brady at the age of 43 and away from Bill Belichick and the Patriot culture? In your eyes, you've watched him play. I know the arm strength still there, although not as strong as it has been in years past. Like, what is Brady at 43? What are we looking at here for whatever team does sign him on for 2020?
Brady's going to be a guy that can come in and change your culture instantly. And a lot of people are going to talk about, well, is his arm strength still there, as you mentioned? And to me, a lot of quarterbacking has to do with anticipation and getting the ball out quickly and on time. We talk about guys with big arms. You look at, let's say, a draft bust like Jamarcus Russell or guys on down the list that we all oohed and aahed over their arms. Brady's never had a super cannon of an arm, strong enough to play pro quarterback, obviously, but it was based on the timing. So I really think he can go into a team, change the entire way that they go about their business, bring a winning attitude, and that he still has lots to give. You look at what he was dealing with last year in New England, not too many playmakers around him. Josh Gordon was sort of in and out of there, Antonio Brown in the same way, and it was the first year that he, in a long time, had to play without Rob Gronkowski. So you put him in an offense that actually has some dynamic weapons there, and obviously got to protect him. You got to protect any quarterback in the NFL. Brady can still be productive. He said he wants to play well into his mid-40s.
So does he have to play behind a strong offensive line at this point in his career?
Yeah, I really do think so, that you got to have a guy that you can protect. But you could say that for any quarterback in the NFL, that if there's pressure coming either off the edge or up the middle, that your quarterback's not going to have much success. That would be the same for Brady.
You mentioned the culture and what he brings away from the product on the field. He's not the same quarterback he was, obviously, at the age of 43. But as you mentioned, he can bring a lot. And I do wonder, okay, is there a team out there that has a young quarterback that could use a mentor? You think of a team like Chicago, who's got the strong defense, and a quarterback that maybe they're not sold on yet in Mitch Trubisky, although that does not sound like it is a likely landing spot for him. Then you look at the other two spots, the LA Chargers and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You think of the Chargers, and kind of similar to Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay in the final years with Brett Favre, because the Chargers hold a top 10 pick. So say he goes to LA, they can still use that top 10 pick on a guy like Tua and have him play behind Brady, who's coming off that hip injury. And obviously, you know, Tua's not going to be a guy that's going to make an impact immediately, at least you don't think so. Is that a scenario you think makes sense, or where do you see Brady's landing spot? What do you think is the most likely for him?
The one that seems to be top of mind for everyone is, you mentioned the Chargers, because now they've moved to Los Angeles and Brady just opened up a production company. I believe it's called 199 Productions or something along those lines, because that's what his draft position was all the way back with the Patriots. So do the Chargers make sense? In some ways, yes, because of that production company being set up, and that would be the big stage, and he sort of kind of would be following in that LeBron James mold, where he went out to L.A. and Hollywood and tried to set up his career for after he was done on the court, just like Brady's trying to do on the football field. But if you look at the Chargers, you know, their offensive line is a little bit shoddy. Can they shore that up? They do have some playmakers there, so it could be a landing spot. The one intriguing place that's sort of been bandied about behind the scenes is the Miami Dolphins. They have that Patriot culture there, with a lot of their coaches having gone down there. They spent a bunch in free agency to improve. And you mentioned the young quarterback aspect. They could bring in Brady, and they have picks early in the draft who could teach that young quarterback and sort of be a bridge guy while the Dolphins get competitive. And if you can look at that relationship, how it was severed between Belichick and Brady at the end of his New England time, Brady's a pretty competitive guy. Don't you think he'd like to maybe stick it to Bill in his own division?
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think a game in Foxborough immediately is something that definitely intrigues a guy like Tom Brady. He is Justin Dunk, talking all things football here. It's from Three Down Nation, and we're on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. So that's the Brady story leaving New England. What about the Patriots? Because they were equipped for this, you know, for the past 3 or 4 years, it seemed, whether it was Jimmy Garoppolo, then even a guy like Jacoby Brissett. Now, they don't have those guys there. It does sound like Phillip Rivers could go to the Colts, which means Jacoby Brissett could be available in trade. Maybe that's the guy they go pursue because of the familiarity. But what do the Patriots do now with no Tom Brady?
We know Belichick's always got a plan, so you can imagine that they would have held firm on their number that they were comfortable paying Brady that would have gone into their salary cap. And I would bet my bottom dollar that Belichick already had this mapped out, that if Brady does not come back, and he would have probably sensed that from some of the talks that they have, what's our next plan? Jarrett Stidham is on the roster. They talked about him a little bit and how they do like him, but do they want to go get a more proven guy? I mean, can't forget that, you know, a few years ago, the Patriots were able to win 11 games with Matt Castle, a quarterback. So they look at a quarterback like Teddy Bridgewater, although it seems like he's been linked to Carolina right now. Do they look at potentially Phillip Rivers being that guy? It doesn't seem like that. You would imagine Bill's going to find a young guy that he can mold, that can not necessarily be the next Brady, but a young guy that he can have with the franchise for a while that he believes in.
What is Bill Belichick? We always talk about what Brady is without Belichick, and I think this one's a little maybe easier to answer. What's Belichick without Brady?
We're going to find out, because Brady just came up so clutch in so many different moments, and I think the one aspect that sort of gets forgotten is that, yes, Belichick is a genius, and obviously a lot of those defenses were talented, but is that Brady, you know, oftentimes didn't have a lot of talented playmakers around him. You know, he had a run with Gronk, but those early Super Bowls that they won, you really can't name an offensive star that they had other than Brady. He was sort of the guy that was the backbone of that offense through the entire time. And we all know that you have to have a proven guy or a guy that can get it done at the game's most important moments. And Brady showed he could do that time and time and time again. And to be able to find that next guy is going to be difficult. But we did see the Patriots shift their style a little bit last year, running the football, sort of going back to that old school ground and pound mentality. So maybe that's the way Belichick shifts to protect a young quarterback in his system.
Now let's talk about the rest of the AFC East, who have watched the Patriots dominate for 2 decades, and their fans elsewhere are going to have a chance perhaps to maybe see that division crown go elsewhere in 2020. Myself, as a Jets fan, you're hoping that maybe this is a turn. Obviously, they have not been able to protect Sam Darnold, who's also not been able to live up to his full potential yet as an NFL starter. You look at what's happening in Buffalo with Josh Allen. You mentioned Miami maybe is a landing spot for Brady, who's also got a ton of picks in the next 2 drafts, and they look like they're maybe building something special there as they go out and get a top corner yesterday. And now Brian Flores has got 2 real good corners to build his defense with in Miami. So what does the rest of the division look like here, and who's poised to maybe take this crown away from the Patriots?
It seems like it might be the NFL team that's closest to me, the Buffalo Bills, that the way that new regime with Brandon Bean and the way that he's gone about building that roster seems like they're ready to jump up and potentially take that number one spot in the AFC East if indeed Bill Belichick and the Patriots stumble without Tom Brady. You look at what they do, go out and give up a lot of picks, but get a bona fide young 26-year-old number one receiver in Stephon Diggs that has back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. Should be mentioned, playing with Kirk Cousins at quarterback, so can only imagine what he could potentially do with Josh Allen if those two develop a rapport. They already had John Smokey Brown in the mix last year and other guys that were really rising on offense as playmakers, young running back and Devin Singletary. The offensive line seemed solid, and that defense was sort of the calling card of their head coach. So it really does seem like the Bills are well positioned here in terms of getting Stephon Diggs and Brady potentially leaving the division.
Let's stick with the quarterback theme. This is always the most exciting week in the NFL when you see a ton of shuffling. I don't know if this one comes in the surprise category, but you mentioned Teddy Bridgewater being heavily linked now to the Carolina Panthers. And again, I don't know if this is shocking, But it seems like Cam Newton's time is over. They've given him permission to seek a trade. Of course, if that does not happen, I would expect them to release him and he will go elsewhere. Health is always a big issue with him, but he's an electric athlete when healthy. What's Cam Newton right now in this stage of his career? And what does this move mean if the Carolina Panthers were to replace Cam Newton with Teddy Bridgewater?
Well, it seems like it's more of a culture shift there in Carolina with Matt Rhule, the new head coach coming in from Baylor, wanting to make sure that the culture he puts forth to these guys is going to be carried out by that quarterback. And everyone talked about Teddy Ballgame when he came in there for Drew Brees in New Orleans when he was injured, and just the mentality that he had and how the guys rallied around him really showed those leadership capabilities. A lot of people have questioned that with Cam Newton, especially, you know, after they lost the Super Bowl, the way that he handled that press conference, how he can kind of be up and down at times, that, you know, maybe Carolina moving on isn't so much about that tantalizing ability that Newton has, but more about what he's like day-to-day in the facility. We talked about it with Tom Brady, that he can be a game-changer in terms of building that winning culture. So I would imagine that's what Carolina's looking at in bringing in Teddy Bridgewater, that he's a consistent guy. You know you're going to get that hard work and effort every single day, and you're not going to sort of have these peaks and valleys like you do with Cam Newton. That said, obviously the potential with Newton from a playing standpoint is off the chart. So you would imagine that teams needing a quarterback and a guy that can be a potential game changer, and with Lamar Jackson winning the MVP this year in Baltimore and the proliferation of the zone read run game really taking a lot in the NFL, that Newton could be highly sought after on the trade market.
The world we live in right now, with COVID-19 taking over North America and most of both the U.S. and Canada in a lockdown when it comes to travel restrictions, how tough is it for teams exploring a trade for Newton? We talk about his health. If you can't visit with the guy, you can't bring him in. How tough is that? How difficult is it going to be for someone to go out and get Cam Newton?
That's going to be tricky because the medicals mean a lot to these teams. And the fact that you can't potentially bring in Cam Newton to literally look at every inch of his body, if you're going to trade heavy assets for him or give him a big contract, could mean a lot. Maybe it's a holdup. You've got to remember the teams aren't held to, you know, signing guys or trading for guys at this point. So it could be potentially a little risky if you want to do your own medical. I'm sure the Panthers will do everything in their power to give them teams that are seeking potential trading for Newton the documents that they have medically, but all the teams are going to want to have their own doctors go over Newton. So that could be a potential foothold. But, you know, when the guy is available and the trade market's hot, sometimes, and in this instance, as you mentioned, with the coronavirus sort of taking over and limiting the visits, that you might just have to trade for him without having that medical.
He is Justin Dunk, Three Down Nation, chatting all things football here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We've seen this before with teams giving out big money for a limited sample size. Do the Tennessee Titans have any other choice but to pay Ryan Tannehill?
I think they had a lot of other choices, and I think there's some people out there in the football world that are surprised that Tannehill got $118 million, because you look at, yes, he did help them get to the AFC Championship game, but that was with some weapons around him, top among them the NFL's leading rusher and Derrick Henry. And there were other options on the quarterback market. We're even seeing more now that it could have gone and gotten. Mike Vrabel has a strong relationship with Tom Brady. They won Super Bowls together with the New England Patriots. That could have been a direction that they went. There's young players on the market, like, let's say, Teddy Bridgewater. I think, you know, a lot of people would grade Bridgewater over Tannehill right now. And you can look at Phillip Rivers, obviously Cam Newton. I think that would have been known by personnel executives in the back end behind the scenes that he might have been available. Lots of quarterback options out there. So I don't think they necessarily had to sign Tannehill to that massive deal.
And we'll see what that means now. Obviously, a franchise tag for Derrick Henry. They can still sign him to a long-term deal, but that's a lot of cap money eaten up by Ryan Tannehill. Minnesota Vikings bringing back Kirk Cousins. I don't think that surprised a lot of people, but still, this Viking team seems to be in that kind of the stall of this build, because they've had this nice system built under Mike Zimmer, but have never taken the next step. I don't know if Kirk Cousins is the guy to do it. And you've got, you know, last year you had that blow up between your top receivers and your quarterback. You've lost now a receiver, as you mentioned, in Stephon Diggs, or that trade to Buffalo. I don't know. Again, there was some options out there. Like, I don't know if a Tom Brady signing in Minnesota, but Kirk Cousins is back with the Vikings.
He is. And to be honest, for the Minnesota Vikings organization as a whole, it always spoke volumes to me that they didn't want a guy like Bo Levi Mitchell to come in there and compete with Kirk Cousins, that he was just going to be given that job no matter what he did. So that told me that they were always going to side with Kirk Cousins and essentially ride or die with him. And that might be the end of some of the coaching careers there, like a Mike Zimmer or some of the guys in the management positions, because they've stuck with him. It just doesn't seem like he has that edge to him. To be quite honest, I think the Minnesota Vikings could be better off with Bo Levi Mitchell as their starting quarterback, but they didn't want that. So it's very surprising to me to see that they've chosen to go with Cousins, give him two more years on his deal after giving him all of that guaranteed money, and yet they trade away a 26-year-old receiver in Stephon Diggs, who was viewed by many personnel men around the league as a legitimate, bona fide, number one controllable asset who's still under contract for 4 years. So I think it's a really dangerous move by the Vikings to keep Cousins in there because of the mentality around there that he creates in terms of just sticking with him no matter what happens.
Speaking of trading a bona fide number one receiver, still trying to figure out what Bill O'Brien was doing. Does not like DeAndre Hopkins and then trades him to Arizona in a deal that involves a washed up or not what he used to be David Johnson.
Well, a hurt running back and a second round pick, and you compare it to the Diggs deal, Buffalo had to give up quite a draft haul to get him. Obviously, a first-round pick was included there. And if you were going to say, well, you know, which receiver would you rather have, that could probably be left up for debate. But I think a lot of people would probably choose DeAndre Hopkins if we're talking about, you know, even a 1, 2, or 3 year window. And the Texans don't even get a number one pick for the guy. And running back is a position, really, throughout pro football that we've seen that you can fill in. Just look at the Buffalo Bills last year going with a, you know, late round draft pick as their starter at running back. So to me, it's really surprising that Bill O'Brien has been allowed to continually make these moves. He's essentially the head coach and general manager of that team. And I don't know if they've gotten better since he's taken over that role.
We know he's coming back for a 17th NFL year. I think Kyler Murray got better as his rookie year went along in Arizona. What does Hopkins mean on that Cardinal offense? Obviously a massive, massive impact maker that gets plugged in right away as your number one receiver.
Seriously, to go along with Kyler Murray, the young quarterback, I'm sure he's happy to see a guy like DeAndre Hopkins there. And then he can look over, as you mentioned, to his other side, see Larry Fitzgerald. They have Christian Kirk in the mix, a young first-round draft pick receiver that they're building with out of Texas A&M. You put that all together with Cliff Kingsbury, who's an innovative offensive mind, and it looks like they're going to try to keep Kenyon Drake there at running back, who's really productive for them after he came over at the NFL trade deadline last year. And that Arizona offense has the makings to be very potent.
What else has really caught your eye? I guess we can talk about in terms of quarterback and receiver combinations. They still got to get a deal done with Dak Prescott, but that's $100 million now for Amari Cooper, who ever since being acquired by the Cowboys has really shown that instant chemistry with Dak. And I don't know what his view was league-wide with the Raiders, but he's taken off in Dallas and he gets rewarded.
That's right. And the Washington Redskins came in and tried to pry him away from Dallas. And you just saw him being used in the way that Cooper is supposed to be used. A lot of isolation reps trying to get him in one-on-one coverage. And you got to give some of that credit to the Cowboys offensive staff at the time in getting him there. You know, Jason Garrett was obviously a part of that, and so was their offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore. So I really think that Dallas has let Cooper essentially be himself there, where with the Raiders, you know, he was nicked up a little bit, had some trouble staying on the field, but that hasn't been the case in Dallas. And you wonder if that signing happened to try to entice Dak Prescott to come back maybe for a little bit less, but it doesn't seem like he's budging on his price tag.
What is Dak Prescott in your eyes?
He's got to be probably in that sort of top half of the league in terms of starting quarterbacks if you look at what he's done in that offense. And could you slot in, let's say, a different quarterback there and continue forward? Like, you're going to have to pay a guy playing that position, you know, a good amount of money, and with what Dak has done there and the chemistry he's shown with Cooper, it seems like, you know, might be overthinking it to tinker there and to leave Dak to potentially leave Dallas and bring in another quarterback. I think it's easy to say that, well, you know, maybe you could be better, but when you look at what Dak has done there, proven that under that spotlight in Dallas, that he has gradually grown and developed there and become a legitimate franchise quarterback in the league. Is he a guy that can win you the Super Bowl? That's yet to be proven, but I think you got to look at the type of pressure that he plays under there in Dallas is almost unlike any other spot in the entire league.
Gonna, you know, pick your brain as a quarterback, because I think we all can see the decline, but I know that, you know, there's familiarity with the Indianapolis coaching staff and some of the personnel there, but what is Philip Rivers in 2020? Because I think for a lot of people, they would say that there's not much left in the tank. I don't know if he puts you over the top. Why would the Colts go and replace Brissett with Rivers?
Exactly. And it seemed like, you know, Philip Rivers, maybe time just sort of ran out in Los Angeles with the Chargers, for lack of a better term. He had been there forever, that sometimes you just need a culture change is sort of what I'm getting at. That I do really think that, you know, Rivers is one of those guys that's the first guy in the building, last guy out, even though it's a cliche. He works hard, obviously a family man. So from a franchise perspective, he's the type of guy that you want to be the face of your franchise. So maybe he just needed a change of scenery, and potentially, you know, maybe that's what the Colts or some of these other teams are looking at, that, hey, he still has that fire that burns in him. You can see how passionate he is about football, still gets after it. A guy's going to push his teammates to be better. And, you know, we also can't forget that some of those Chargers teams, that even though Rivers doesn't have a Super Bowl ring, were pretty darn good when he was there in San Diego. And even though now they've moved to Los Angeles, I still think that there is a lot left that Rivers has to give, and that if he comes into a situation where a team needs a quarterback, let's say like in Miami, you know, could he be a bridge guy if Tom Brady doesn't land there? Or as you said, if you're the Colts, do you feel more comfortable with a guy that's more proven in Rivers instead of rolling with Brissett? Although Brissett at times last year looked like he might be capable of being a longtime NFL starter.
Just a few more with Justin Dunk, 3Down Nation, all things football here on Sportsnet 960 to 9 on this Tuesday morning. Tom Brady leaving New England is the talk of the football world. I do want to ask you, you're very well connected in the CFL, and their season obviously fast approaching. We know the NFL is not changing their draft date. They're going to hold it in Las Vegas on the proposed dates in April, but with no fans and really the bare bones type operation because of the coronavirus outbreak. What does that mean for the CFL draft? And I guess just your thoughts on where the CFL is, because from all indications, they still believe they're going to start on time. We don't know how this thing moves. Every day is quite the unique adventure, but what's your read, or what have you been able to kind of gather from some of your CFL sources?
As you mentioned, Will, it should be first said that it's still a very fluid situation. That, to be quite honest, we got to admit that we don't know what's going to happen with the coronavirus or COVID-19, the pandemic and the outbreak, and when the potential might be to, you know, get back to playing live sports could be. We really do have no idea. But what I can tell you is that there have been conference calls going on. They started on Monday with the general managers around the league to get direction from Randy Ambrosi in the league office, in the sense of what can we plan for going forward. And you mentioned the NFL draft still going to happen as planned, April 23rd to 25th. CFL draft is currently planned for April 30th. There's a global draft with their new 2.0 initiative that is scheduled for April 16th. So just speculating, I would imagine that those drafts will continue because that's what the NFL has done, that they'll sort of follow that lead. And it could give them a time where, especially the CFL draft, could kind of become front and center in terms of the sports news cycle, at least in Canada, if everything else is stopped. So it could be a positive PR situation for the league. As for what's going to happen with the regular season and when games might start to happen, I just feel like at this time, it's very hard to say when it could be, because we're talking about, you know, the CDC in the United States saying that, you know, there shouldn't be gatherings of 50 or more people for 2 months. So that would put us close to training camp time in the CFL. But right now, if I was the league, I'd be building in all of these contingency plans. Okay, what happens if the league gets pushed back? We're talking about the NBA not even thinking that they could get a season in, and the NHL considering plans to play hockey, you know, into the summer. So it's all fluid. It's just difficult to say.
Would they be open? I would imagine they are. Would be open to a shortened like season. So say you don't begin till the middle of August, and you still want to get done by the end of November. I'm guessing that's obviously all on the table right now.
You would imagine that, especially in the CFL, where they're so built on the gate and how many people are buying tickets and coming in and, you know, spending their money on the concessions, that they're going to want to try to play games. But, you know, how many people are going to necessarily want to go out to a sporting event after the pandemic, you know, hopefully ends, and hopefully that sooner rather than later? That, yes, you're going to want to play games, and TSN is going to factor into that being the rights holder and the broadcaster, that they're going to want to have some content at some point. But you have to have all these contingency plans on the table. At least the CFL does have those 3 bye weeks built into the schedule, and maybe you could condense it down a little bit, take out some of those bye weeks, and you could still, because they have bumped up the Grey Cup, you know, a couple weeks in November, had that time to play with at the end of November. And hey, maybe you're playing in to December this year if you want to get more football games. And I think everything needs to be on the table.
The XFL closing up shop with the coronavirus, that is tough for a startup league. I guess, just, did you watch any of it when it was on? What were your thoughts of the XFL in 2020?
I did catch the XFL, just wanted to get a sense of, you know, would it stick around? What was the playing level like? Didn't it look like it was competent? And the key for the XFL was that they had some big TV deals with ESPN and some of the major networks down south that were carrying it and pushing the brand. And even though the TV numbers were going down, some of the level of play seemed like, you know, maybe it could entice people to watch it on a yearly basis at that time of year. But as you mentioned, with the shutdown happening, you know, potentially that kills any momentum that they did have in the XFL, although they have said their finance to come back and play in 2021. That if you look at just the TV ratings shrinking and the crowd numbers shrinking, that what's it going to take to build that out long term? And is there really a thirst for football that much in the United States when, let's say right now, you have the new CBA in the NFL? It's going to likely stretch the NFL season to 17 games. And they're talking about, you know, potentially now with this extra playoff team getting in the AFC and the NFC, owning sort of the month of February, that maybe the Super Bowl might not be played until the end of February now. So what room is that going to leave a spring league like the XFL? Because we're talking about, obviously, like the draft and free agency, you have a little bit of downtime, and then the training camp start in the NFL. So I just don't know if there's room there for the XFL. We're going to find out.
And we were talking to Dave Dickinson last week at an event, and he was kind of talking about that as well. I'm curious your thought on it, and people you've talked to, what's the read been? Because Dave Dickinson says it might be fine for a year or two, but he doesn't know how many guys are willing to do it for a decade, and that is, you know, play an XFL season and go right back into a CFL year. That's a lot of games. You're talking about 30 games in your body, and, you know, you just, I don't know how long you can handle that.
That's right. And just from the standpoint of playing games, and a local example for your listeners would be Derek Dennis, who played for a number of years with the Calgary Stampeders, and his plan was to play the XFL season and then come back and play a CFL season. And, you know, even though as much as that sounds good from a money-making standpoint, the toll that it's going to take on your body playing 18 CFL regular season games, you might even have to dress or at least play a few snaps in the preseason. And then if you're on a good team in the CFL, you know, you're going to be in the playoffs and at least have, you know, maybe 1, 2, or 3 more games, plus 10 in the XFL. It just seemed like as much as guys wanted to try to double dip, that playing that many games in a sport like football, how rough and tumble it is, was going to be extremely difficult. So I think Dave Dickinson was on point.
You guys have been all over it. What's been going on the last couple of weeks with this coronavirus? Things have really come to a slow here, or a halt in some instances. But what's been going on over at Three Down Nation?
Well, we're still tracking, you know, whatever moves are going on. Let's say, for example, The Ottawa Redblacks last night released Canadian offensive lineman Philippe Gagnon, due to make $180,000 in 2020. Part of the reason they had to make that move was because Nick Arbuckle, the former Stampeders quarterback, was paid a hefty price tag to go to the nation's capital, and along with the Redblacks signing a number of other players there. So there are still moves going on within the Canadian Football League. There is sort of virtual scouting going on, if you will. There's a lot of video being watched, as there normally would be, getting prepared for the draft. But there's calls, interviews going on behind the scenes with prospects as the teams try to get ready for the CFL draft that is currently scheduled on April 30th. So even though a lot of people are in self-isolation or obviously not going out as much amid the COVID-19 pandemic, there is still going on behind the scenes of the CFL.
And my final one for you, what is the cancellation of the combines meant for the CFL?
To be honest, it's just a unfortunate timing for the league, because that's really another point in the offseason where they can be in the news and especially have guys sort of burst onto the scene in terms of the CFL world and for the fans to see them for the first time. Because yes, you know, U-Sports does have a different following amongst the various provinces throughout the country. But when you get invited to that CFL combine, that's saying to CFL fans throughout the entire country, coast to coast, that those are the best guys. And then now you can start following those guys and their careers and where they might potentially end up, or do you like their performance at the combine and do you want them to be on your team? So it generates a ton of conversation. So I think that really is going to be missed by the league, but there's nothing they can do about it.
He is Justin Dunk. Thank you so much for your time today, pal. We've kept you long enough and away from whatever else is occupying your time right now. But thanks for spending some time with us. If you do not follow Justin, if you're a football nerd, he is a must follow on Twitter at JDung12. Go give him a follow. Let's get him to 10,000 followers, because that's what he needs right now. But JD, thanks for your time, bro. It's been fun.
Thanks, Willie, man. Anytime for you, brother, and everyone out there, stay safe.